The fall of Enron began in October 2001. The giant energy company lost $19 billion in market value in just 24 days. And 24 days is the title of a new book by two Wall Street Journal reporters who scooped the competition. Rebecca Smith covered the energy industry, and John M. Schweiler reported on white-collar crime. When Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling suddenly resigned from his dream job, saying he wanted to spend more time with his family, M. Schweiler and Smith knew something wasn't right. I spoke with the authors about how and why they first went after the story before it was a story.
There were two things that really started us going at the beginning. As I was reading one of their filings that they make with the Securities and Exchange Commission, they had just made a recent quarterly report, and came across a section that they normally have called related party transactions, which is about deals that company executives and directors do with the company itself, and came across these very strange discussions about unnamed partnerships run by and partly owned by some unnamed executive doing what looked like hundreds of millions of dollars of business with Enron. And my first thought was, oh my God, is that Jeff Skilling? So I put a call into Enron. And then that same day, Skilling did call back and gave me what I thought was the strangest interview I'd ever had with a senior executive of a major company, because he was really sounded almost like a depressed man, and he was kind of almost talking to himself, muttering about the falling stock price. If it only hadn't fallen so much, everything would be okay, and he'd still be the CEO. And I thought, this guy, what's he talking about? And the day before, they'd been putting out, oh, it's just personal reasons. So those two things got us sort of interested and questioning. And we decided to do a story where we mention the partnerships.
Okay, so that all led to a call to Rebecca Smith. You say that was a key call?
It was an absolutely pivotal moment, I think, in the unfolding of the Enron story, because what we had done was we had put a story in the paper at the end of August that mentioned these executive-run partnerships, but we really understood very little about their inner workings. So we put what we knew in the paper, and it was kind of like putting a message in a bottle and tossing it out into the sea. You hope someone will get it who can respond. And in this case, a key source came back, phoned me and said, hey, what you have is good, it's interesting, but you don't know the half of it. Call me if you want to get some more information. And it proved to be a person with key information from inside of Enron that mapped out for us what these partnerships were and began to suggest to us how key they had been to the entire financial engineering of Enron.
This source you're speaking of is clearly a confidential source that you're not even going to tell us the name today.
I won't even tell you the gender.
What? And you know, when you were digging in to this story, was there pressure from Enron to you all to just back off?
No, they were pretty sophisticated in the ways of the press.
Stonewalling then?
Well, they certainly did that, you know, and that was one of the early signs actually we had that we might have been on to something bigger, and perhaps something really big, because Enron had a reputation, well deserved, for being very available to the press, that they were very proud of how they could handle the media and tell their story, and we went to talk to them about the partnerships after we'd gotten some inside documents and some, you know, gotten enough information together where we felt we could go and ask a series of, you know, intelligent questions. And they stonewalled us. They said they didn't grant us an interview. They demanded written questions. And then they came back with a one paragraph canned response and said they weren't going to say anything more. And that silence, at least to me, was, you know, shouted loudly that, you know, maybe there is something big going on about these partnerships.
And I had another exchange with Ken Lay shortly after the episode with the unanswered questions, in which I asked Ken Lay for more information about these LJM partnerships. And he had said previously he wasn't going to talk about it, but in the course of an interview on their earnings, I circled back a couple of times. And at one point, Mr. Lay said, oh, Rebecca, there you go again. You're being sneaky. As if asking questions about the company's financial structure was considered somehow devious.
Well, that would be the sort of motivating factor for me anyway, if I were you, to keep on digging, being called sneaky. And for you, when you two were doing what was a certain kind of detective work, was there a moment, a eureka moment, or a moment when you thought, this is it?
Well, there was certainly that first call from that source and those conversations. I think there was a feeling of a eureka there. That was the first sense there was something darker and bigger going on inside of Enron. And then from there on, there were other moments that started building because the story started just taking off.
You know, there was another moment, too. John mentioned that initially in that conversation he had with Jeff Skilling, Jeff had said that he was troubled by the falling stock price. And at the time, we thought, well, so what? We're in a bear market. All the prices are falling. This is something that every CEO in America faces. Why would you be more angst-ridden than others? Later, we came to understand that he was tormented by that because, in fact, Enron had been stuffing shares of its own stock into these partnerships to form part of the sort of equity backing of some of these off-balance sheet arrangements that it made. It was a complete violation of standard accounting rules.
I also remember one other moment, November 8th, when we'd been reporting now for a fair amount and writing a lot of stories and feeling like we were sort of, you know, pushing out the limits on things and because the company still wasn't talking. But on that day, they came out with an SEC filing, another one, and they made an incredible series of disclosures, several of them sort of confirming some of the stuff we'd written. And I remember sitting there, because it was early in the morning out in California, sitting there at the computer watching the headlines roll across the news wires about this filing. And just one, you know, they renounced 4 years of financial statements. They took several hundred million dollars of write-offs of income they'd already booked. They added hundreds of millions of dollars of debt. They fired two senior executives. And I remember thinking, this company, it's like watching pieces of a big building falling down piece by piece, just collapsing in front of your eyes, almost transfixed watching this thing collapse.
John Emshwiler and Rebecca Smith are authors of 24 Days, How Two Wall Street Journal Reporters Uncovered the Lies That Destroyed Faith in Corporate America. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.